Welcome to the Truth Hurts program with Steve Z.
Kitchen table items for America's working families. Mr. President, thank you for unifying and inspiring a vision of a stronger, fairer, safer future for all, for our children. Your extraordinary leadership has made this glorious day possible.
Crickets chirping.
That's an applause line.
She had to tell the audience to applaud. She told the audience, who was sleeping, bored to tears, trying to figure out how many drinks Nancy had had, which artist painted on her eyebrows this morning so crookedly. She had to tell them that's an applause line. And then, on cue, people started to clap, but not very enthusiastically. But don't worry. After naughty, nasty, Nazi Nancy Pelosi got off the stage from behind the podium, sleepy, creepy, touchy-feely, mumbling, fumbling, grumbling, stumbling, tumbling, muttering, puttering, fluttering, shuddering, stuttering, stammering, mopey, dopey, little girl, gropey Joe Biden scampered over to the podium and gave another snooze fest of a speech in which he lied repeatedly about the economy and how it's so much better.
Just have to remember who we are. We are the United States of America.
He said this from behind his sunglasses. I guess he thinks he's Top Gun, Maverick or something. They keep putting him in these sunglasses because he thinks it doesn't make him look like the octogenarian he is.
There's nothing we've ever set our mind to. Nothing that we've not been able to accomplish. Nothing beyond our capacity. And so just remember who we are. We stand together. There's nothing beyond our capacity.
Now, if you notice, the people were barely clapping. They had like six people in the audience going, yeah. Okay. No rousing cheers, no real support for gropey Joe Biden.
May God bless you all and may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Sergeant Carter.
So now that the busy summer travel season is over and the Atlantic hurricane season has not churned up any reason for the oil and natural gas platforms in the Gulf of Mexico to shutter operations, the normal natural reduction that happens every year in oil, gasoline, natural gas, and diesel prices has begun. It has zero to do with gropey Joe Biden. He's the one who raised those prices, by the way. Even with all the numbers that we are seeing right now, in the United States of America, let's consider some of the more important numbers out there for you and for me under Joe Biden. Gasoline prices are still 25.6% higher than they were this time last year. And that's after Biden is running around telling everybody that he's lowering the prices when he refuses to take the responsibility for raising those prices to begin with. Electricity, we know you're having trouble paying your utility bills. Your electric bill up 15.8% compared to last year at this time. Gas, natural gas, utilities, overall utilities costs up 17.2%. And winter is coming, my friends. The price of heating oil, the fuel oil, right now, we haven't even had the first cool snap, much less cold snap. Fuel oil for heating is up 68.8%. Think about that. 68.8% more to heat your home today, and winter has not even arrived yet. Guys, do they not see what they have done to this country? Oh, Joe Biden, though, he's going to sit there and he's going to lie and tell you that everything is just Jim Dandy.
Mr. President, can you tell us about the inflation numbers today and the resulting dive in the stock market?
The stock market doesn't necessarily reflect the state of the economy, as you well know.
A reporter asked gropey Joe Biden about the 1,276-point plunge that the Dow Jones Industrial Average took after Joe Biden's latest month of 8-plus percent inflation was announced to the American people. And he has the audacity to say the stock market doesn't reflect the economy. It's funny, when the stock market was rising, the Biden administration was on television touting how great the economy is. Just look at the stock market. I love the double standard, the hype, the hypocrisy, and the lies of the left.
And the economy's still strong, unemployment's low, jobs are up, manufacturing's good. So I think we're going to be fine.
Are you worried about the inflation number, though, sir?
No, I'm not, because we're talking about 0.1%, and, you know.
No, we're talking about 8.3% year over year, August of 22 compared to August of 21, and a year over year inflation rate of over 8.5%, Joe Biden. Are you not paying attention to the numbers, or do you still live in that fantasy world with that earpiece and those teleprompters and cue cards?
Anyway, thank you.
He refused to take any more questions. The guy hates getting called out when he is dead wrong on an issue. What a puss. Okay, let's change gears for a moment. Have you ever seen the movie The Purge? In that movie, criminals are given a free 24-hour pass. Not just criminals. Citizens all over the nation are given a 24-hour pass to purge themselves of all of the desires to commit crimes or to get revenge on someone. And they can go out and commit murder, rape, robbery, whatever the hell they want. Anything they want in The Purge. Well, we know that that's not quite anything we would truly want. Wait a minute. Illinois is passing a new law that some people will say will be historic. Illinois will be the very first state in the United States of America to do away with the cash bail system. They're abolishing cash bail. And the consequences of passing this really ridiculous law will probably make the state mirror the horror movie The Purge. Because on January 1st of 2023, just a few short months from now, the SAFE-T Act will commence in the state of Illinois. SAFE-T is an acronym. They say it stands for Safety, Accountability, Fairness, and Equity Today. The act will get rid of the cash bail system in Illinois in its entirety. You will no longer need to pay your way out of jail while you wait for your trial. Those that instate the act think it will reduce arrests and will limit people put away based on crime. So here's the Safety Act in a nutshell. There are 12 offenses where the new law would end cash bail. You cannot go to jail. You cannot be detained. You will simply basically get no more than a little traffic ticket and a warning that you need to appear in court. You ready for these? You will not have to go to jail and be detained if you commit second-degree murder, arson, drug-induced homicide, robbery, kidnapping, aggravated battery, burglary, intimidation or threats, aggravated driving under the influence, fleeing, eluding, drug offenses, or threatening a public official. Those are non-detainable instances where the new law will end cash bail. The state attorney, Robert Berlin, says, "I'm very concerned about an increase in violent crime. But again, I do want to stress there is still time to fix it. And the state's attorneys are working very hard, as we have been for the last year and a half, to fix this law. It is very fixable, where we can still eliminate cash bail, but make sure the right people are in custody and everyone else who's not in danger, or not a danger, rather, gets out. Just gets out of jail. No bail, no bond. Just released on your own recognizance. After all, you just committed second-degree murder, drug-induced murder, robbery, kidnapping, aggravated battery, arson, burglary, intimidation, aggravated driving under the influence of alcohol. You could be fleeing or eluding police officers. It's drug offenses. It's threatening public officials. Nah, we're not going to make you post cash bail. Because our Safety Act will allow criminals a pretrial release for any and all of those crimes I just mentioned. If prosecutors fail to show clear and convincing evidence that the alleged accused could be a threat to a specific individual, then those people just get to walk free. Unfortunately, the consequences of the Safety Act make an impact on how fast arrested criminals need to be dealt with. Prosecutors will only have 48 hours to decide whether an alleged criminal should be released. And if they don't make a decision, they are automatically released. No bail, no bond. Of course, investigators think that 48 hours isn't enough time to collect valuable evidence from surveillance cameras, witnesses, laboratory work, forensic research, fingerprint testing, etc. And they, the investigators, would be correct. The reason for the act, as controversial as the law is, this is how it came about. For many years in the U.S., a bunch of black racists, people who think only black people are unfairly incarcerated, have wanted to abolish the cash bail system. They claim that 3 out of 5 people in jail have not been convicted of a crime. Because sometimes you have to wait in jail or post bail to get out, the bail being the proof, the requirement that you will show up for your trial, and if you don't, you forfeit your bail. You understand how that works. So these people are sitting in jail awaiting trial. Most people being detained, according to this report, can't afford the bail. They can afford the tattoos and the bling bling and the gold teeth and the drugs and the piercings and the fancy cars, right? They claim that most people in detention can't afford the bail and end up spending weeks or sometimes even months awaiting trial. They claim it's 500,000 people wasting away in jail cells before there's even a trial because of a lack of police officers and investigators actually doing that research and investigating. They claim this new program will allow for speedier trials. They also claim, of course, when they have to play the race card, that the system mostly affects communities of color who already have the odds stacked it against them across the country. The Center for American Progress says studies show pre-trial detention can actually increase a person's likelihood of rearrest upon release, perpetuating an endless cycle of arrest and incarceration. No, being a thug criminal animal on your 10th, 12th, 40th, 80th arrest, that increases your likelihood of rearrest. You liberal, progressive, woke clowns. This is the Truth Hurts program. Chuckles the Clown Schumer is facing reality, probably for the first time in his career. He says House Speaker Nancy Naughty Nazi Pelosi is in trouble, and Democrats are likely to lose the House. He declared this during a private dinner with a bunch of fellow Democratic senators, according to reports. Anders Hagstrom on Fox News says Schumer and six other Democratic senators were spotted dining at Trattoria Alberto, a swanky, very expensive and exclusive Italian restaurant in D.C. This supposedly occurred Monday evening. The group was speaking loud enough to be heard by other patrons. Schumer reportedly expressed confidence that Democrats will keep the Senate in November, but he said the Republicans have about a 60% chance of taking the House. The other clowns at this dinner? Pandering, race-baiting, begging, Chris Coons of Delaware, Mark Kelly of Arizona, Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, Tom Carper of Delaware, John Hickenlooper of Colorado, and Dick Durbin of Illinois. All of those guys are in pretty shaky ground of getting reelected. Schumer weighed in on a series of other topics. He claims that House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy sucked up to former President Donald Trump, and he stated his belief that Trump will indeed run again for president in 2024. This dinner was held a day before revelations that Schumer was putting $15 million of his own campaign funds towards Senate races for fellow Democrats in danger of losing their seats across the country. They are donating $5 million of Schumer's campaign money to the Senatorial Democratic Campaign Committee, and another $10 million will go directly to the campaigns of senators in trouble. Well, at least Chuckles the Clown Schumer has enough common sense to realize that Nancy Pelosi is probably on her way out. Gay Mayor Pete, the homosexual man who had to take paternity leave to nurse his adopted son, says Detroit Highway will become a boulevard, and that will address the wrongs done to Blaffrican communities. In further race baiting and pandering to the 13% AA hyphenated American minority, according to Reuters, a Detroit interstate highway whose construction allegedly devastated two historically Blaffrican neighborhoods will be turned into an urban boulevard. And taxpayers will fund this as one of 26 infrastructure projects newly funded by Gropey Joe. The U.S. Transportation Department, headed by Mayor Pete, the homosexual former mayor of a very small town who only got appointed to his position because Biden needed a queer guy on his staff, has awarded $104.7 million to replace a one-mile section of the I-375 freeway. Hang on a second, folks. We'll do a little Truth Hurts program mathematics here. A one-mile section of the freeway would be 5,280 feet long. Dividing that number with your $104.7 million grant means the Biden administration is using your tax dollars to spend $19,829.54 per foot of highway. The construction of the I-375 freeway began in the late 1950s and worked through the 1960s, and supposedly cut through two prosperous Negro neighborhoods. Black people's businesses were purchased at fair market value, according to the eminent domain laws of our nation, and some businesses and churches had to move as well. The land wasn't just taken from these black people. They were paid for the lands. According to Gretchen Whitmer, another pandering, race-baiting, African-American sympathizer, governor, Democratic person, she claims that about 130,000 people were displaced. Of course, that's not possible. What is an interstate? 200 feet wide? Maybe? And a mile long? You mean 130,000 dark-skinned people were crammed into that 1 mile area? Sounds like the interstate did them a favor. Of course, Mayor Pete, begging for the funding in order to pander to the African-American 13% hyphenated American minority, says that the funding aimed at spurring economic development will go towards realigning the ramps near I-375 and installing what they're calling calming traffic measures and wider sidewalks and finding ways to reconnect neighborhood streets to the new boulevard. They haven't figured out which Black American figure they're going to rename this section of the interstate after. But Mayor Pete says other impacted communities of color could use government funding to address the harms done by evil racist highways. He said, quote, "Creating the kind of streetscape that this community envisions is going to be a great future for how the streets and the roads of this city ought to look, and it's important because it addresses the damage done to a mainly black community through the gash that was created, that was I-375. The U.S. planned more than 40,000 miles of interstate highway in the 1950s. Dwight D. Eisenhower's federal interstate highway system. And many of those highways were routed through historically black and poor neighborhoods. But guess what? Many, many more were routed through white-owned neighborhoods and farms and business communities and warehouse areas. The Department of Transportation issued a statement on Thursday saying it will be awarding $1.5 billion for 26 projects similar to the I-375. They include $150 million for a new toll road and port of entry facility in Mesa, California at the Mexican border, $110 million to redevelop a large food distribution center in New York, and $70 million to rehabilitate a 100-year-old railroad track in Chicago. See where all that money's going? Democrat strongholds. You don't see it down there in Texas, where a large, large portion of freight, you know, the supply chain runs through. Oh, no, no. They could never do anything nice there. Meanwhile, the pandering to the African American community once again continues. Fairfax County, Virginia is just a stone's throw from Washington, D.C. It's home to over 25,000 government employees of the federal government. It's the headquarters of the CIA. And 160 years ago, the county was an important battlefield in a war called the Civil War. It truly was a war about federal rights versus states' rights. But over the years, over the decades, it has been co-opted to become a slave-only war. Supposedly, those evil, redneck, no-good country folk down in the South wanted to keep their Negroes on chains and keep them enslaved. And the people in the North, well, they were more democratic, they were more civilized, and they wanted to free the slaves. The fact is, many in the North wanted to keep their slaves even after many in the South had already freed their slaves, including General Robert E. Lee, who freed his slaves before the Civil War was half over. Grant, the Union general, he kept his slaves until the last possible moment. Yesterday, the Fairfax County Board voted to rename its federal highways that are currently named after the Confederacy's most well-known generals. According to the Washington Post, the Fairfax County Board voted 9-1 to rename the Lee Jackson Memorial Highway and the Lee Highway. And of course, the 9 Democratic board supervisors were for the name change, and the 1 Republican supervisor was against it. The roadway's name for Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson will simply now be known by their federal route numbers, Route 50 and Route 29. Oh well, I will still call the Lee Highway the Lee Highway and the Lee Jackson Memorial Highway the Lee Jackson Memorial Highway, just like I still call Lee Circle Lee Circle in New Orleans. They can change the name on the sign all they want. It is what it is. And the newspaper known as the New York Slimes has some big troubles right now. Nearly 1,300 New York Times staffers are refusing to return to the office. In an article written in USA Today, more than 1,000 New York Times staffers refused to return to the office this week and are threatening to strike if the company, the very liberal, progressive, woke news outlet, doesn't cave to its employees' union demands. Oh, isn't it terrible when you go out there and you support those unions lock, stock, and barrel on your printed newspaper and on your website, and then the same union turns around and bites the hand that feeds it? The organization's union employees announced on Monday that they have sent a letter to corporate leadership with the names of nearly 1,300 members of the union who have signed a pledge to continue to work remotely this week, the first week that the company wants all of its so-called journalists back in the office. Throngs of union staffers tweeted their disdain as they were given cute branded lunchboxes as a free perk in a bid to get them to return to the office 3 times a week. Employees said those little trinkets and small gestures don't help with the soaring gasoline prices during the Biden administration, the steady increase in inflation during the Biden administration, and sharply rising interest rates since Joe Biden took office. By the way, the 1 percentage point increase expected to be announced by the Fed next week will mean that the average interest rate for a 30-year fixed home mortgage is going to rise to over 7.5%, according to many experts. The people who signed the pledge include members of the News Guild, the Times Tech Guild, and Wirecutter, all liberal, progressive, woke, Democratic-supported unions. Senior staff editor Andrea Zagata told Fortune, "It's kind of amusing to put lunchboxes out as the one thing that people are going to gather around when you have a staff of journalists that often work right through our lunch breaks." Meanwhile, the newspaper is going to continue to be published. Any return to office policy as a matter of workplace health and safety should be a part of a negotiated contract, the union wrote in a statement. They believe any return to office procedures should fall in the same negotiating camp as provisions for wages, equitable treatment for members, and other matters as they relate to the workplace. Oh well, whether they're working from home or working from the office, the New York Times says they will continue to be printed, which means the bottoms of bird cages, litter boxes, and doggy pee paper will be safe for your animals to continue urinating and defecating upon. This is the Truth Hurts program. Racism is alive and well, my friends. According to the Daily Caller's Mary Rook, there's a CEO of a company out there who's making the case for race-based layoffs. Now, can you imagine if tomorrow a company says we're going to use race as the basis of laying off all of our African American 13% hyphenated minority employees? My God, the business would be burned to the ground. There'd be riots. People would be getting shot, stabbed in the streets. But Twilio co-founder and CEO Jeff Lawson announced on Wednesday that his customer engagement platform will be conducting a round of layoffs with a race-based focus. Mr. Lawson published a blog post on Twilio's website warning that the company will immediately downsize its workforce by 11% to align its investments more squarely with its priorities, like promoting anti-racism and anti-oppression. "We ultimately found," according to his letter, "we ultimately found that some investments no longer make sense and identified areas where we can be more efficient." He said the firings are a result of the platform growing too quickly and losing its focus on the most important company priorities, including, of course, profitability, and their commitment to anti-racism. The company used a rigorous selection process to determine which employees will be impacted through their reconstruction. He says, quote, Today's layoffs are about aligning our investments more squarely with our priorities, as well as running our company more efficiently overall. As you all know, we are committed to becoming an anti-racist, anti-oppression company. Layoffs like this can have a more pronounced impact on marginalized community, so we were particularly focused on ensuring our layoffs, while a business necessity today, were carried out through an anti-racist, anti-oppression lens. Those white people being laid off will receive 12 weeks of salary as a severance, plus a week of pay for every year with the company, and they will have their stock options fully vested. But it's okay. We're just laying off white people. We're just laying off white people here. You black folks don't have to worry about it no more. Unbelievable. Braden Yella wrote on the Daily Dot, "You can't live here for free, people. Property manager calls out tenants, sparking debate." A property manager has gone viral on TikTok after posting a video calling out her tenants for not paying their rent. In the video, the user Nicole at NicoleFeather1 says she called tenants who did not pay their rent to see what their issue was. She claims she offered the tenants help with filling out rental assistance application. She asked if they needed to make a payment plan and offered a variety of other options to help the tenants. She says, quote, "Whatever I can do to help you, I don't know your situation." In response, the people living there who refuse to pay their rent say she is very rude. Miss Nicole writes, "They get an attitude because you're doing your job. I don't understand it. In market communities, you have to pay rent. You cannot live here for free, people." At first, one commenter claims that the process of paying back rent or applying for rental assistance has probably overwhelmed some of the tenants, resulting in them being needlessly curt. In other instances, users say the tenants might be dealing with issues outside of their control that affect their dealings with property management. One commenter says, "I don't think they want to live for free. They probably just stressed out about their past due rent. I wouldn't take it personally. Everyone would love to pay their bills. It's hard to not have enough money on time to pay your bills on time. I am trying to get on assistance right now because my job be messing with my paycheck." Miss Nicole says she understands people may have issues that might affect their payment, and rather than quietly dealing with those issues, she insisted it's better to inform her of the situation. Perhaps she could help them figure out the best way to resolve the issue. Miss Nicole says you have to communicate, make a plan. Based on what I can see, it's probably a low-rent community to begin with. And when people are accustomed to having things like free rent and rent forgiveness by Joe Biden and the Democratic Party for the last year and a half, I guess they just expect to end rent. You know, the Biden administration actually thinks you're stupid. They have no answers to the challenges our country's facing. So instead, the administration officials resort to treating voters like they're ignorant and stupid. Remember on Tuesday, Joe Biden announced we are celebrating the signing of the Inflation Reduction Act, a climate bill that the Democrats pretend will ease inflation. But meanwhile, while celebrating it, the inflation was announced that it sits again in August at 8.3%, just a teeny tiny bit lower than the 8.5% in July. Food prices nationwide are up over 11% on the year. Biden's celebration of beating inflation took place at the same moment the stock market hit a two-year low, 1,200 plus points. The stock market went down. Meanwhile, Camel Toe Harris claimed during an appearance on Meet the Press that we have a secure border. Just this year, of course, well over a million migrants have illegally, successfully crossed the border without being caught by the Border Patrol. And we've caught over 4 million since Biden took office. Cartels are making billions of dollars a year smuggling migrants and drugs over the border, yet Camel Toe Harris thinks you're stupid enough to believe her lie that the border is secure. It's an out-and-out lie. According to Harris, the border is secure, but even White House Press Secretary, gay, lesbian, black island woman Karine Jean-Pierre, CB, disagrees. She claims the Biden administration is doing a lot more to secure the border than the Trump administration did. That, too, is a lie. "I don't see a wall, Karine." Does anyone actually believe any of these lies? That Biden, who ended the Remain in Mexico policy, who ended Title 42, is somehow tougher on illegal immigration than Donald Trump? Are we supposed to believe that it is Republicans who are fighting tooth and nail to allow illegal immigrants to enter our nation, to the point that they are obstructing Biden's efforts to keep the border secure? Biden and Harris are the most incompetent, incapable, individuals to run the United States since Jimmy Carter. No one believes Biden or the Democratic Party give a damn about securing the border, or that they have a plan to solve a border crisis, or that they have somehow fixed inflation, recession, and high interest rates. Average everyday people are smart enough to see the effects of inflation by looking at their grocery bills, their gasoline bills, anything that they spend money on. All they have to do is look in their bank accounts or their wallets. They also see Biden bragging about the trillions of dollars that Democrats have wasted in the last 2 years, leading the straight line to inflation. They also see Biden rolling out the red carpet, lifting border restrictions, while Democrat-run sanctuary cities don't want the illegals to be shipped there. Voters aren't stupid, but the Biden administration has to pretend that they are, because they have nothing to pitch. They have nothing positive to run on. The entire presidency has been a train wreck, and the best spin they can offer is to pretend the issues voters actually care about don't exist at all and lie straight to your face. My friends, I've run out of time for this edition of the Truth Hurts program. Happy Friday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time. Opinions expressed are protected free speech under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I apologize if you were offended, but I retract nothing. Background music provided by Jason Shaw and Audionautix.